are friends with fantasy benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast. It's just going to be me and you, man. Just a nice little chat between friends about some baseball.
I didn't expect to sit off from the name with two Ds.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
You know, a lot of times I sound crazy, but I'm not that crazy. Was traded to the Texas Rangers. I guess they're trying to acquire all of the, possible fantasy studs of years past.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
First off, I'm not dropping him unless I'm in a 10-team league, and I'm still probably not dropping him there because pitching as a whole, has just not been good.
It's been bad, really, really bad.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Yeah. Welcome to episode 153 of the Friends with Fantasy Benefits baseball podcast. I'm your host, Mike Werner, and with me is my good buddy, my good pal, our lead prospect analyst, Matt Thompson. Matt, what's up, dude?
Nothing, man. How are you doing?
Doing well. Just, watching an array of baseball games. You can kind of catch me doing any weekday night, at least. Sometimes I kind of venture out on the weekends, but there's still...
You don't have any friends, though, man.
I have a couple. I have a couple. We'll just leave it at that.
We had a lot of little tiny news nuggets everywhere today. It's been a weird day.
Yeah, that's kind of the way the baseball season turns towards the end of the year, at least. You always have just little things that happen each and every day. Hard to keep up with, especially when, you have a full-time job and, you're raising kids and all that type of stuff or whatever. But, obviously, Justin Mason is not with us tonight. He actually got
scouting Tim Tebow.
Yeah, scouting Tim Tebow for sure, which I got to say, I understand Tim Tebow had a magnificent high school career and everything, and he's jacked. He's 255 or something right now. And, you see the video on him, and it's easy to be really, eyeing him to possibly make the majors or something. But at the end of the day, if Mike Trout, who is a top five pick, took 3 or 4 years to get to the majors, how long do you think it would take somebody like Tim Tebow? If it comes down to something just as simple as a major league team wants, some fans in the seats, Tim Tebow will certainly garner that. maybe somebody will take a shot.
I'm kind of rooting for the guy because everyone on Twitter is kind of shitting on him for pursuing his, a dream or whatever. But I mean, it's extremely unlikely, but I think it was a lot of encouraging signs today based on everything I've seen.
I can admire somebody chasing a dream for sure. He knows at any given time he can go back to the SEC network and just do his thing, and probably
he's not worried about the money because he's got enough. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So as far as the minor leagues and making a very little amount of money, I don't think that that's a big factor, especially when you're trying to accomplish something. But, I agree. I'm rooting for him as well. I hate him because he's from the University of Florida, but I always admire watching people, give their hard, work and see if it, comes up to the test and, wins out in the end. We'll see. It's something to monitor with Tim Tebow. But like I mentioned, Justin is not here tonight. He actually got to not participate, but he got to, see a pretty, cool event last night. We're recording on Tuesday, so Monday night, he got to see an array of different speakers, including Eno Saris over in San Francisco over there. So I'm sure the next time he records, he'll be able to give you guys some insight on what he was able to see and talk about and everything. But I know he had a lot of fun there. His daughter's birthday was on Sunday as well. So he's, kind of coming off of that. And Eli is also not with us tonight. So it's just going to be me and you, man. Just, a nice little chat between friends about some baseball.
Sounds good to me, man. Bring on the All-Pro team today.
Yeah. Justin did leave me with a list of players, so I'll definitely dive into that for sure. But I did want to, since we're getting down to the nitty gritty here, especially in, it doesn't matter what league you play in, head to head or roto, we're getting down to the wire. Fantasy football touts and everything are already, in the middle of their analysis, and people are already switching over. If you haven't seen in some of your leagues, they're just kind of dropping out of fantasy baseball. And this is a perfect time to capitalize on guys that are surging at the right time, and I won't even get into Justin Upton because we talked about him last week, and I'm just, all power to him. I'm very happy for Justin Upton for right now. he screwed me over all year, but at least we're getting some value out of him. So the multiple shares that I have are at least being salvaged by the last few weeks. He's been posting some spectacular numbers. But I did want to mention a guy that isn't on our list, but I over the last 2 weeks he is second in ISO. He's actually leading in ISO amongst qualified players in the second half of the season, and that's Ryan Schimpf. Over the last 2 weeks, he has 4 home runs, 8 RBI or 9 RBIs and 8 runs scored. Still only 10% owned in ESPN leagues. He's only second base eligible on ESPN, so that's something to certainly take into account. But he should be much higher owned. He's not the most talented guy in the world, and he still has a lot of working. He has a lot to work on in his game. Still strikes out a lot as well, but. With batting average not being great amongst the league, I think Ryan Schimpf should be owned pretty much everywhere where you're needing some power at this point. San Diego isn't playing for anything, but he's going to continue to be in the lineup. So I just want to mention a hitter that I think everybody, especially if you're, again, trying to look for some power at the end of your lineup going into the stretch run here, could use, which is Ryan Schimpf. Do you have a pitcher for us that is kind of, taking your eye for these last couple of weeks that you want to mention?
We originally had a different pitcher, but I'm changing gears a little bit on you, so sorry I didn't screen this with you beforehand. But
no worries.
sticking with the Padres, we wanted to stick with somebody that's probably available on the wire. How about Luis Perdomo?
Game six hitter the other night. Yeah.
Yep, the Rule 5 pick for them. The last 21 innings, he's got a 1.6 ERA and a 1.02 WHIP. So that's useful for down the stretch for you if you need somebody. Looks like he might be coming into his own as a starter. Best pitch has always been the changeup, so hopefully he continues with good luck with him. It's a really rough start for him, so the numbers look terrible still. But, he can pick it up a little bit and help you out down the stretch, hopefully.
Yeah, absolutely. He was a guy, especially in DFS, that I was targeting. I was targeting my hitters against for a long period of time. But he has changed things a bit. His left on base rate is kind of regressing back to a normal, kind of stabilizing number. And he has always had a good ground ball tilt, which we always look for. Not an amazing park in San Diego, but a good enough one. Strikes out a good enough amount of batters. I think he's a solid NL-only play and somebody that's obviously been streaking lately as well. Let's dive into some players, man. We'll start off with a guy that wasn't on our list. We'll actually start off with two starters that just weren't on the list, but we want to kind of highlight for the moment. Gerrit Cole has landed on the DL, and what has been not the most disappointing year, but certainly disappointing in terms of where fantasy owners drafted him earlier this year. He's on the DL because of a inflammation in his elbow. There is talk that he will be able to come back this year. What are you thinking though? Are you going to hold on to Gerrit Cole, who was the number 11 starting pitcher taken off the board in drafts, number 36 overall? Are you going to hold on to him for the stretch run, or if you need the roster space, you're going to drop him?
I think I'm holding him. The waiver wire, I don't know about leagues you're in, but the only league I'm in, the pitching is pretty bad. I mean, there's no real big September call-ups you can anticipate. Maybe Jose De Leon for the Dodgers, but other than that, there's no big pitching prospect that'll probably be coming up. They think he's going to pitch again this year. The Pirates are optimistic. They need him. They're, trying to get that wild card spot locked down. He's kind of, from my understanding, he's kind of got similar to what Noah Syndergaard's dealing with, a little inflammation, and they think the inflammation is caused by a bone spur. We'll see. If you can hold him, I would. I know it's been a little bit disappointing of a year for him. I mean, good props to you, Mike, because you called him taking a step back going into this year, but you got to hold them. Nothing left on the wire. I know there's not much analysis, but I mean, it is what it is at this point.
A lot of times I sound crazy, but I'm not that crazy. I got a lot of shit for Gerrit Cole earlier in the year. To keep it simply with Cole, he's not this bad. He's outside of like the top 70 starting pitchers in terms of the ESPN player rater. That's just flat out false. He's not a top 70 guy. He is certainly a top 30 starting pitcher, at least going into next year. How about for next year? Are you concerned about this elbow problem at all? Are you concerned about his, any of his underlying metrics? Because his xFIP was about, you know, he's actually out earning his xFIP right now. It's above four. He has a 3.5 ERA for the season. Obviously, the WHIP is what stands out. It's almost at 1.40 this year, which is by far a career low. It's not really close. The velocity is still ticking the same. A lot of the other underlying metrics, strikeout per nine, even though it's down from last year and the year before that, we've seen him do much better of late. So overall, I think that he's just, you know, I think he's still at least top 25 guy going to next year. But, you know, there is an elbow problem, and a lot of times people, you know, get concerned about that. Are you one of them?
You have to be concerned. I mean, you have to bake that into the draft value next season. I mean, it looks like they're having him pitch again. So it's an injury, but it seems one that they think they can manage. So I don't anticipate him having surgery this offseason to fix it. I mean, I haven't heard anything about that. So I agree with you, top 25. Don't like the Ks being down. Don't like the walks being up. It's the strand rate, or excuse me, the ground ball rate's the same. But he's given a little bit of bad BABIP luck this year. And you mentioned him outperforming his FIP and XFIP. So it's kind of been ugly if you dig down into the numbers on Gerrit Cole. I think you missed the boat if you're trying to trade him. I think in keeper dynasty you kind of have to hold him. But I'm in on him next year, but I'm not paying nearly the price he went for this year.
Yeah, absolutely, and I don't think anybody will. I think you'll be able. We'll probably be talking about him as a buy low at some point in the off season, but we have a lot of time to kind of cover all of that. Alex Cobb from my Rays team is another injured starter here that is going to be making his way. Actually, his season debut, his 2016 season debut, coming off of Tommy John surgery. It hasn't been great in the minor leagues, and we're seeing a situation where the Rays are going to be going to a 6-man rotation. It looks like at least for the month of September. I don't have Alex Cobb anywhere, and a lot of people that I've seen in leagues have already stashed him. So for me, he's not somebody that I'm particularly eyeing to, you know, trade for or target. You can't really trade a lot anyways in most leagues that you're in. But regardless, if he's available, say in a 12-team league on the waiver wire, are you going to take the plunge?
Absolutely. Like I said, pitching in my leagues is pretty thin. He's the guy that he's done it for me in the past. So I'm going to go back to that. Well, hopefully it turns out a little better than Homer Bailey's return has gone. But you have to expect with Cobb the low whip. Hopefully he's got that little split change up back. And that's his bread and butter pitch. You would know better than me being a Rays fan. But hopefully that returns and Cobb can help you down the stretch. If he's available, I'd go grab him. But the first start against Toronto kind of scares me. Maybe grab him and keep him on your bench and see what happens.
He's the type of guy that, you know, if you're just looking for a desperation pitcher, then I don't mind throwing Cobb out there. But this is the first time he's going to be starting since 2014. Almost 2 years now is how long it's been since he has actually towed the rubber in a major league game. His split change is what he uses about 40% of the time. He's going to continue to do that. Really not a four-seam guy. Really more of a sinker split type player that always, you know, seems to garner a ton of grounders with that pitch. With those pitches, I'm sorry. So I think that, you know, Cobb is an okay. I think he's going to be like a top 60 guy the rest of the way, if that makes any sense. You know, you'll probably get four or five starts out of him. So take that for what it's worth. But he'll have some value in some leagues, probably more of a streamer in shallower formats. If you kept him this whole time in AL only, then you have to kind of ride him out at this point. But I don't think the innings will be nearly as quality as we've seen in the past. In terms of next year, I think that, you know, he's going to be somebody that's going to be again on an innings restriction, probably kind of like Matt Moore last season with the Rays. Somebody that won't pitch a full complement of innings, but will, you know, be trying to kind of get the feel back for where he was prior in his career. So take that for what it's worth. Let's dive into more of the players that Justin sent me here. So Russell Martin, somebody that is kind of disappointed from the aspect of, you know, the catcher position this year, but the catcher as a whole has disappointed. On the ESPN player rater, he's still a top 10 catcher. So you can't really say that, you know, he's somebody that has been disappointing, because at the end of the day, you know, with the position as a whole being so bad, you know, Martin's been okay. But what are we thinking about Martin going into next year and for the rest of this season? You know, for me, I think that this is kind of the beginning of him starting to tail off a bit offensively. There's really not a ton of places in the league that are better for hitting than Toronto. And the fact that he's been somewhat mediocre. I mean, he's turning around in the second half this year, but somewhat mediocre for the year kind of has me a bit concerned going into the future.
Yeah, he's ironically enough, his career games played is dead even at 1,400. I mean, that's a lot for a catcher. So, unfortunately, I think you might be right. He's 33 years old. He might be seeing the decline of Martin, but I think that might have started last year. I mean, 2014 has proven to be quite a fluke. 290, 402, 430 for an 830 at OPS. He hasn't done anything like that since. I mean, in 2015, the power was there, and in 2016, it's been ugly for that. But over the last 30 days, he's hitting 304, OBP just shy of 400, and slugging 640s for an OPS of over 1,000. So he's been red hot, kind of making up for the disappointment for the beginning of the season. He's rewarding you for staying patient. With the catcher position so thin, I mean, I doubt anybody dropped him because there's really nobody else to pick up. I mean, I suppose you could have dropped him for Sanchez or something.
No, nobody dropped Martin.
No, because, I mean, he was hitting the ball in that last 30 days when Sanchez came up. So, yeah, if you're a little disappointed and weren't getting what you expected, I mean, I get that. But, I mean, you're not going to drop him with how bad the spot is. So, next year, he could be a potential bargain if you can get him outside of the top 10 for a catcher position, but we'll see.
Yeah, from July on this year, he's been much better. So kind of look into what he was doing prior to that and kind of be, concerned. And I am concerned for the future about that, because we saw this in the second half of last year. He still had the home runs, but his batting average tailed off considerably. A lot of his other underlying metrics tailed off as well. It was kind of BABIP fueled, and he was hitting a ton of grounders. This year, he went to more of a fly ball approach, and that kind of didn't lend to positive results until the second half. So far in the second half, he's been great. I'm not really concerned about that. It's more just been on the season as a whole. I'm a bit concerned by some of the things that I've seen. His hard contact has been, mediocre at best. The catching position, though, is a position that overall has been just so mediocre that Martin still will stay in the top 10 for the year. He might even creep up to more of a top 5 area when it's all said and done if he continues to, hit at his torrid pace. But overall, I think that, going into next year, if I'm selling as a team, and I'm looking for younger pieces, obviously you would do Martin for, Gary Sanchez, but I would do Martin for, Wilson Contreras as well, because I think Contreras, especially with him having eligibility at other places, will give him the opportunity to play more in the future. And Martin has had multiple different issues. He had a neck problem in the first half that, probably hindered his performance as, more than we probably know, which is why he's
definitely,
maybe that is a factor that he's feeling a little bit better now, and that's why he's producing. But I also don't expect this Toronto lineup to be as good next year as well. So,
I agree with you on everything you've been saying. And sorry to cut you off, but one minor thing with Russell Martin, too, is they went out and acquired Deonner Navarro. Maybe he eats into a start a week. I mean, and coming down the stretch, that might hurt. Numbers wise, so keep that in mind. See how that plays out.
Yeah, he was a top 5 catcher, Martin, going into drafts this year. I think he will probably slide to like 7 or 8 going into next season, which is fair. And, for AL only, it doesn't really matter. And really, there's not a ton of analysis to give here. I think he is the type of guy that I think will go on a, gradual decline as he gets older. I don't think it'll be a steep just drop off in his production overall. I mean, he still, when it's all said and done, has 15 home runs this year, which, gives him 15 or more in 4 of the last 5 seasons, which makes him fairly safe. But the batting average, like you kind of mentioned earlier, in 2014, I don't think will ever be matched. And, you can't ever really expect him to get back to that point. So 240 with about 15 bombs is about what you can expect moving forward. Agreed. And, that's that.
And yep, I agree. And I just want to say the thing with him is like, he's always going to be, he's going to hit his severe decline before he loses playing time, if that makes sense, because he's such a good defensive player. you don't want to get caught with your hand, you know, owning Martin and being a big bank on Martin when all of a sudden the bottom falls out and he's still getting all that playing time because he's so good on D. You know what I'm saying? So it's going to be really hard to invest any decent amount of money or draft picks in him going forward for me.
Sure. Yeah. And I mean, it's tough to do that with any catcher, to be honest.
No, that's definitely fair.
Somebody that a lot of people were unsure of coming into this year was Masahiro Tanaka. And I tell you what, man, he has been nothing short of just flat out great this year. I've always been worried about Tanaka because of that, you know, that elbow injury from a couple years back. I was open to drafting him this year, though. I, you know, felt like he was going at such a solid price that was already kind of baked in. He was outside of the top 120 picks before the ADP, you know, when the ADPs were given out. Tanaka was also outside of the top 30 starting pitchers, which, you know, has been great in terms of value for this season. He's been a top 20 starter in terms of the ESPN player rater. We've seen him do great in terms of his ERA. He's sitting on a 3.11 mark, which is much better than last season. 1.07 whip is among the lead leaders as well, among qualified starting pitchers. Above average swing strike rate. The velocity is a tick down from last year, but he's giving up less home runs. There's a lot to like here. Not by far, but his best season to date in the 3 years he's been in the league. Any thoughts on Tanaka for the rest of the season and for next year?
Well, I definitely need to adjust my thoughts on him because he was the kind of a guy I was scared of because of the elbow concerns. And I'm kind of willing to, I mean, it's been 2 years now. I mean, I'm kind of willing to let that go. He's like transformed himself this year. He's relying way more on the sinker than the four-seam fastball. He kind of threw the four-seam fastball aside. He's a big sinker slider split guy now, which is kind of interesting because you think the slider and the splitter are really stressful on the elbow, but he must be feeling better if he's throwing those more. So that's what I deduce from that. So he's a guy that I'm going to need to adjust in my personal beliefs because, like I said, I was scared of the injury concerns, but I think it might be time to put those by the wayside because he's done nothing but produce, and you said this is his best season this year, and it really has been, and it's not even close.
Yeah, I mean, he actually turned to the four seam this last month a bit more than we've seen in the past, but he's kept the foot on the gas with the splitter. He's kept the foot on the gas with the slider. He just has so many pitches that he's able to kind of, manipulate the strike zone. That's the word I was looking for. I'm sitting here thinking about a word. manipulate the strike zone and induce a lot softer contact than a lot of other guys in this league. I really like what I've seen from Tanaka. I've watched a lot of his starts this year, just kind of incidentally, not really, trying to do it. I've just, done it anyways. And I've really liked what I've seen. Going into next year, he was about a top 30 starter. Do you really see his ADP changing, though? I think that if anything, he might drop a bit, if that's even possible.
Yeah, it might go up a little bit. I mean, it will for me. I mean, I shit on him. I don't remember off the top of my head, but I had him pretty far down. But, I mean, the top 30 starter, I think I'd rather own him over Garrett Cole next year. And we talked about Cole just being top 25.
Yeah, I wouldn't. Regardless, I think Cole has more upside that we haven't seen yet. Yeah, but to put it in perspective here, some of the guys around Tanaka prior to draft season starting, or prior to the season starting, is James Shields, Jordan Zimmermann, Francisco Liriano, Garrett Richards, Michael Wacha, Raisel Iglesias. Those are a lot of the guys that are around where Tanaka went. So, it's really hard to peg pitching, and especially this year, it's just been a kind of a nightmare. In terms of, getting pitching value, especially where you're drafting them. So Tanaka has certainly been a bright spot. And I think it's just somebody that we need to kind of highlight so that people understand just how good he's actually been and, how sustainable it is. Because, when you look at his underlying metrics, there's really not a lot different. He's actually giving up more line drives than he did last year, but he's giving up less fly balls and inducing more grounders. And it's really not even being benefited by a left on base rate that's inflated or a BABIP. If anything, his BABIP is closer to what it was in 2014.
Definitely.
There's a lot of encouraging signs here for now and for the future. So I'm pretty comfortable with Tanaka until he gives me a reason not to be. Is kind of been surging, and maybe some of his prospect pedigree is finally coming to fruition with his new team, the Cardinals. Jed Jerko, you know, give me an explanation on what he has been up to lately, and if he is somebody that 14-team league owners should grab, or if he's somebody that, you know, should be left for maybe even deeper leagues.
I think 14 teams is about the right size to make a move here. He's got the shortstop eligibility, which is kind of nice. But with Jerko, man, he's been a godsend for the Cardinals this year. Trading John Jay for Jerko turned out to be a pretty decent trade. He's fundamental changes across the board. He's walking more, striking out less. He's at his career high in batting average right now, which is kind of very bad because it's only .249.
He's at his career high in everything right now.
Yeah, he really is. 23 homers, which tied his career high. So
23 people. 23, and that's not even in a full season's worth of games.
No, he's got a chance. He's got a shot to get 30 if he keeps going, because he's red hot right now. And tonight is the magical 10th start at shortstop, so he's going to be eligible in most formats for next year. Well, some formats for next year. He's already got first base eligible with 10 starts there, 40 starts at second, 30 starts at third base. He's hitting second in the Cardinals order for the rest of the year. I mean, obviously someone picked him up. He's owned in most leagues, I'm assuming by now. I don't have that information in front of me, but he's hitting prime spots in the order now. We're moving him up to second. When Diaz comes back, I think he's going to play third, push Peralta to the bench. He's been damn good so far this year, and it's been really, really surprising. I didn't expect this at all from the man with two Ds.
I think Jorko is somebody you should grab in even shallower leagues, to be honest with you. He does have – I think he's just finally kind of tapping into what we've been expecting from him. You know, I think the – I almost called him the Chargers, but the Padres gave him up for just too little, in my opinion. You know, he's always been a power pedigree guy. And, you know, I'm not even talking about draft costs. I'm just talking about what he's done in the second half. Among all the second basemen, he's third in ISO. He has 16 home runs in the second half of the season. Yep, you know, he's batting nuts up top in a lineup that crushes righties. Just got Matt Carpenter back. Hopefully he kind of returns to form a bit. But he's getting playing time. He's going to be eligible at multiple spots in the middle infield. There's a lot to like about Jed Jerko. I think he's a buy, especially in deeper, you know, formats. If he's not already picked up, you should pick him up. In shallower formats, I would kind of weigh my options. I still believe in like your Javier Baez's of the world and stuff like that. So I would keep, you know, somebody like that above Jerko. But he's been one of the best power guys in the second half, not just at second base, but in general. And he should be on your team at least until he kind of fizzles out here. And
yeah,
you know, at least to my knowledge. Go ahead.
No, I was happy with the trade when the Cardinals did it in the offseason, because I thought, oh, sweet, there's my platoon partner for Colton Wong and Carpenter to keep them fresh. But shit, he's blown all that out of the water. And it's one of the I don't give him enough credit for Mozeliak for making that move, because that was a damn shrewd move there.
Well, if you remember too, like Johnny Peralta coming or being out for like that a good amount of time because of the thumb or whatever it was, you know, a lot of Cardinals Nation and Fantasy Nation really was like, wow, what are the Cardinals going to do at shortstop? They're going to put Jerko there and, you know, this out of the other. All of a sudden you have Greg Garcia, who's been, you know, not amazing but solid. Olimus Diaz had like an amazing first half, about as amazing as you could possibly hope for. Another interesting guy that we'll definitely dive into more as the offseason comes around, because he's going to be a really hard guy to pinpoint what his value will be next season.
Definitely.
But yeah, I'm sure you'll have as many hours as you want to talk about that.
Oh yeah. Can't wait.
We are waiting, at least, you know, talking about second half starters. I'm personally waiting for Jason Hamill, who is a historically a guy that drops in the second half fairly considerably in production, to drop off this year. It just hasn't happened yet.
Last two starts it has.
Well, and that's kind of what I was getting to.
Yeah, well,
we're starting to see a bit of that regression, but he's still, for, you know, especially this year, among all the Cubs pitchers, he is amazing at home. And just the Cubs in general have an amazing staff when it comes to pitching in home games. Jake Arrieta has a big split when it comes to that. Kyle Hendricks is better at home as well. So this Cubs staff, I think, is certainly doing the job when they're in Wrigley Field. But what do you think about Hamill for the rest of the way? Are we going to continue to see what he's been doing the last couple of starts? Are we going to see what he was doing before that, which was stay consistent with what he was doing in the first half?
Well, I mean, we kind of talked about Hamill on this podcast
before, with Dot Thorburn, yeah.
Yeah, a couple months back, and we kind of dubbed him as, like, the luckiest pitcher in baseball. You remember how his underlying stats were like his BABIP was his BABIP is still like 258 right now. Strand rate's at 78%. He's giving up 1.2 homers per nine, and it's really not hurting him.
Mm-hmm.
I think the numbers are finally starting to catch up with him. Like you said, he's notorious for second half struggles. And looks like they're finally starting to get up to him. But I mean, I don't think there's any chance he's this bad because I mean the last two starts at Colorado and at LA. Have been pretty putrid. He was pretty pissed at Joe Maddon for taking him out early against the Dodgers last start, but I think Joe kind of knows that they kind of got lucky with him and kind of doesn't want to mess with it because he knows the true talent level for Hamill is somewhere in between what he's showing now and what he's been for the first half. So he yanked him really early into the ire of Hamill. But like you said, I mean, the Cubs as a whole, I don't know if it's the infield defense alignment or whatever, but the team BABIP is crazy low, and 258 for Hamill right now, like I said, is nuts. Like that's crazy. It's 50 points below league average. Like how many points off the ERA do you think that's worth? I mean, like not really, but you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you regulate the BABIP to normal. Is he pushing four ERA? I mean, the peripherals aren't that great. You're not looking at anything sexy. His best quality for right now is being on a really, really good Cubs team, so he gets the wins.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I think that he's still, you know, even when you factor in the, you know, that he's going to regress the rest of the way, because I don't think there's any way around it. He's just always been that type of pitcher. So, you know, when you factor that in, I think you look at him because pitching has been just flat out not as good as it's, you know, been in the past, and not as good, but just depth wise, we're not seeing as many guys emerge in later on in the season. So maybe somebody like a Luis Perdomo, you know, might be a saving grace for us. But, you know, Jason Hamill, he's about a top 35 starter. I'd say he's about top 50 the rest of the way, you know, and in terms of strikeouts and everything, he's a tick down from last season. I think last year as a whole will be one of his better years in terms of the underlying metrics. You know, we've already seen him considerably, you know, down from last year in those things. You know, his walk rate is better, but other than that, you're looking at a lot of things that just aren't as good. So overall, for the rest of the way, I think he's a top 50 starter. I just wanted to mention that, you know, before going to Coors and to the Dodger Stadium, where he's kind of struggled a bit. You know, he had strung together about four, you know, good starts in the last five that were, you know, you could definitely consider him kind of changing his tune in the second half. But overall, I think he's going to regress, you know, to the point that, you know, we've seen in years past. So, you know, just to put it in perspective, you know, last year in the second, or at least this year, he's been a little bit better in the second half, but last year he had a 3.5 ERA. The year before that, he had a 4.3 ERA in the second half, with the first half being 2.4. You know, you can go back years and years and years, and he's just always been a guy that has, you know, always, you know, performed worse in the second half. How about somebody like Carlos Beltran, who, you know, had a mammoth game the other night and, you know, was traded to the Texas Rangers. I guess they're trying to acquire all of the, you know, possible fantasy studs of years past and, you know, that are over 35. No, I mean, Gomez isn't 35 yet, but Beltran has been kind of, you know, somebody
that's remarkable this year.
Yeah, like he's been kind of hard to, you know, tab, you know, especially in daily fantasy where, you know, I play a lot of. He's just really somebody that, you know, is hard for me to kind of, you know, put my finger on. But this year as a whole, you're looking at 25 home runs, almost a 300 batting average. I certainly don't think he is this level of player, but you kind of have to ride it while it's hot. How about next year, though? Like, what are you doing with Carlos Beltran going into next year?
Oh, well, I believe he's a free agent. He's a free agent going into this offseason. So, I mean, obviously, the easy way out is to see where he goes.
How about this? We'll say he goes to another hitter-friendly place. Off the top of my head, say he goes to Baltimore, which is an amazing place.
Oh, wow. Well, he's definitely got to be drafted in the top. If he's in Baltimore, 175.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know where he went this year off the top of my head. I don't even think he was.
He was outside the top 300.
Yeah. So. I think he's probably top 200 player if he goes to some place like Baltimore. I mean, you have to factor in the age. He's going to be 40 years old.
Do you know if he's going to play, though? That's my thing. Is like I feel like if for some reason Texas takes it all.
If he gets that ring, yeah, if he gets that ring, he might hang it up.
Yeah. If for some reason Texas takes it all this year, I don't think he's going to play next year. I think that he's a perfect guy to sell on, but the problem is a ton of your league mates know that. He's maintained an amazing contact rate this year. He's only striking out 19% of the time, over an 80% contact rate clip. We've seen a bit of a dip in his walk rate, but he has assumed that outfield eligibility. So you will have him as an outfield eligible player if he does indeed play in 2017. Obviously, no threat in stolen bases, but his power has been consistent these last couple of years. Especially since 2013 to now, he's been fairly consistent in his power output. So, if he plays in the next year, I think you can reasonably expect without injury for him to hit over 20 home runs again. I just think the batting average is likely to regress going into next year. And, if he, God forbid, plays again in 2018. So,
yeah, I mean, I could see, I agree with everything you said. I mean, the batting average, I think, could probably settle in around 270 ish at the, 270 ish. And I could see the slugging dropping considerably. I wouldn't be surprised, honestly. The easy cop out is if he was to put up that 2015 Yankee season again. I mean, I think that might be a true talent level, to be honest, at this point. But I mean, that's always a concern with him with the knees. I know the knees have been an issue, but it's hard to imagine him because 3 years ago he was playing right field for the Cardinals. So
yeah, it's
now he's a primary DH, obviously. But I love this dude. He's one of my favorite players of all time. I hope he gets that ring this year. If the Cardinals can't win it, I hope Texas does.
Yeah, if you take out the last two games, though, he's had a pretty bad time in Texas. He was hitting 240 with those two mammoth games. And I know it's easy just to like take those games out and make adjustments accordingly and all that. But if you take those two games out, he's hitting less than 230, 221 to be exact, and he has two home runs and 90 plate appearances. So he's doing a lot worse when you move him to Texas. Regardless, it doesn't matter the small sample size. I think that in general, Beltran has been quality. You definitely ride him out for the rest of this year, and you just kind of see going into next season if he is indeed, in a hitter-friendly environment. I think that it's certainly something where he will be again a top 200-ish player, which he's been this year. So we'll kind of monitor that in the offseason. Ian Kennedy, one of the guys that I was really high on going into this season, has been solid. I mean, he hasn't been spectacular, and a lot of people were either on the fence, saying like, I don't know if I like Ian Kennedy, or some people were predicting a breakout like myself. He's been solid overall, a top 40 starter according to the ESPN player rater. He has been outpitching his xFIP. He has a 3.57 ERA, 4.17 xFIP. Certainly a fly ball guy that has used that to his advantage in Kauffman Stadium. What do you think about Ian Kennedy the rest of the way, and what are we going to be thinking about him going into next season at age 32?
I think he's solid. I know it's not like the greatest analogy there, but I think he's a solid guy that you can target next year to fill in the back half of your draft. I think he's still going to be undervalued going into the season. I mean, the strikeouts are there, which is nice. It's a strikeout an inning. The whip is outstanding. That's providing you a ton of value at that. The Royals are always going to be, they'll be, again, if you play in wins leagues, I mean, you have a good shot at 12, 15 wins. I really like Kennedy, and I kind of suck, I'm kicking myself because I don't have him anywhere this year. And everyone kind of shit on him for getting that big contract this offseason, and everyone making fun of it, which may be fair because maybe the contract is garbage, but I mean, for now, you have to enjoy it because he's been pretty damn good. He's been the Royals' most consistent starter by far, and he's, thank God they have him.
He's amazing at home. So, especially if you're, playing Ian Kennedy in a daily, league where you can make, roster moves any given day, if you feel like, hesitant about starting Kennedy, he's always solid at home. He has a 3 ERA at home, which you can't really ask for better. And his strikeout rate for the year is in line with what he's done the last couple of years, which is over 9 strikeouts per 9. Overall just been solid. Much better at home, like I mentioned, but, he uses those fly ball tendencies, to his advantage at Kauffman Stadium. He still does have a home run bug, which gives him problems on the road, which is why his xFIP is a little bit higher. But overall, you couldn't have really expected much better than what you got this year. And this is, in my opinion, is his second best season to date. other than that one year with Arizona that he broke out in 2011. This is his best year to date, and I think anybody that drafted him should be happy about it, and probably gets that close to the same going into next year.
Yeah, I think he's as consistent as – I mean, there's no reason for him to not do this again next year.
Absolutely agree. I'm still very high on him.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's a target in dynasty leagues like we play, and you know I think he's somebody that you know should stay on people's radars. Somebody that has stayed off my radar essentially since he's moved to the New York Mets is Jay Bruce. I personally I didn't expect what he did prior to going to the Mets.
And, right there with you.
Yeah. And I, you know, really didn't know what he was going to do since going over. Overall, since he's been to the Mets, he's struggled. And I think that was something that anybody could have predicted. Batting under 160 outside of the top 50 outfielders, you know, all of the, you know, usual caveats with somebody that's been struggling for the last month or so. Is there any signs to you that he can turn this around going into the rest of, you know, the fantasy baseball season for this year? Or are you kind of sitting there in shallow league saying, you know what, I'm going to drop him for, you know, somebody else?
I'm dropping him. I think the Mets, he's sitting, seems like a game, a series lately for the Mets. I don't know. I know he's been nicked up a little bit, but he's also been terrible. And I think the 240 batting average, I think, is kind of a stretch as it was anyways. I think the true talent level is what he's done the last 2 years, which is around 220. He's going to hit. He's just kind of a volume player. He doesn't miss a lot of games, so he's always going to put up 25 homer seasons just because he plays a lot. Last year he played 157 games, he hit 26 homers. This year he's played 121, and he's got 27. I mean, obviously the power has rebounded. Strikeouts have been nipped a little bit, but he's just not a good player for me, man. I've never liked him. I watched him a ton when he was on the Reds, and he's just boring to me. He's a one trick guy. He hits home runs, and that's it.
Do you think he stays in New York next year, or do you think he's moved?
Someone's got to go. I mean, if they bring – he's basically Cespedes insurance. If Cespedes stays, Bruce is gone. Because, I mean, they still got Conforto and Granderson, and those are both better players than Bruce. But Conforto, don't even get me started on that. He's their second-best outfielder on the team, and he's in AAA. But
yeah.
Jay Bruce is garbage, and I would not hesitate to drop him. Biases aside, I still would – not hesitate to cut him, because there's this late in the season, you don't know if you can really wait around for him.
Yeah, I mean, everybody knew prior to him going to the Mets that if wherever he was going to get traded, the home road splits were big. So, you know, the fact that he left Great American Ballpark, where he, you know, absolutely slaughtered the ball this year, and, you know, left the team that was leading the league in stolen base attempts, was certainly going to be a dip in his value. I didn't think it was going to be this bad, but the fact that he is struggling, you know, to this point, I'm not really on board with him the rest of the way. In deeper leagues, you know, if you're in like a 16-team league or 15-team league or deeper, there has to be a guy available. If you're an NL only, you're kind of just shit out of the luck. You probably should have picked up a guy that could at least help you out in the short term. But Bruce needs to. He's the type of guy that has gone on hot streaks before, so he's worthy of holding on to. You know, in the case that he does go on a hot streak, but right now we haven't seen any signs of that. You know, he only has two hits in his last 16 at bats, it looks like, and you know he's just not really getting a rhythm going with the Mets. So at least right now in shallow formats, he's okay for me to drop. Going into next year, we'll have to see. If he stays with the Mets, I think he is more of a, you know, deeper league outfield four type guy. If he ends up going to a better hitting environment, I can imagine. I mean, I know I keep saying the Orioles, but I can certainly imagine him going to the Orioles.
He's Pedro Alvarez, so he can do what Alvarez is doing.
Yeah, absolutely. So if he ends up going to the Orioles or something, then that's more of an interesting situation. In dynasty leagues, if you're out of it, I think he's certainly a hold for now. But you know, we'll kind of monitor that situation as it goes. The next player on our list here, our dandy list that Justin decided to give us, is Danny Salazar. And you know, I know why he's putting him on the list.
Polarizing. Yeah.
I know why he's putting him on the list, because, you know, since he's come back, it has not been an amazing time. So this is my question here. Like, first off, I'm not dropping him unless I'm in the 10-team league, and I'm still probably not dropping him there, because pitching as a whole, you know, has just not been good.
It's been bad, really, really bad.
Yeah, so when you have a guy like Salazar who any given time can put up, you know, I mean, even his last start, you know, he only went 5 innings, but he struck out 10. You know, and that was in Texas, which is very hard to pitch in right now at this time of year. A lot of his skills are still great. You know, no, he's not completely right now, and I'm a little bit worried about that from a long-term perspective. But at least in the short term for this year, you can't drop him. So what you're doing is you are pinpointing which starts, you know, he can help you out in, which, you know, you kind of have to take for, you know, take into account. You know, if he's facing pretty much anybody in his division, whether it's at home or on the road, I think that you can feel comfortable starting him. But if he, you know, in my opinion, there's not a lot of places where I would bench him. What's your temperature on Danny Salazar for right now?
It was funny. Well, now, before he got hurt, I was riding the train, man. I was completely wrong about him preseason, and I needed to right my wrongs, and I was trying to, you know, not really acquire him, but I was trying to see what it would take to get him, you know, for going into next year in a couple of leagues I'm in with dynasty formats. But he has completely shit his pants the last month. I mean, I'm sure it's an injury of some sort that they're concealing as best they can, but you can't drop him. It's unfortunate, but you can't. You're not going to get anybody with that upside on the waiver wire. And like I touched on earlier with Gerrit Cole, there's nobody coming up in September that's gonna save your pitching staff. You have to keep him, and you just maybe instead of him being like you touched on, maybe he's not an automatic start anymore. Maybe you have to pick and choose the matchups. Because I mean, who would have picked? But that's a dangerous game, because who would have picked him struggling against the A's and then pitching decent against Texas?
Yeah.
So that's a tough thing to do. If you can trade him for what a decent value, do it. But I don't see how you really can. I know it's not much to give you, but I mean,
no, I mean,
where's he for you next year? Top 25 starter?
Yeah, let me see. You know, kind of going off, you know, just kind of thinking about off the top of my head.
Yeah, sure.
He was top 25 going into this year. I probably will feel comfortable with him as a top 30-ish type guy. You know, going into next year, who would you take, Stroman or Salazar?
Probably Salazar still.
And that's insane. I'm going back and forth as, you know, I'm thinking about it. I probably would go Salazar too. But, you know, I think that this is a direct result of the injury, because if you look at everything else, you know, throughout this year, if you look at just the first half alone, you know, he had a 2.2 ERA and a 1.11 whip. That's, you know, with him always struggling with walks, which he did a little bit better at this year, but still had a, you know, 4 walk per 9. You know, if you look at the second half skills as a whole, he, you know, has an absurdly bad ERA and whip, but his skills are still okay. You know, he's still striking out 10 per 9. He still has a nice ground ball tilt. He's just really getting ripped in the left on base category and the BABIP. But that can also be explained by the injury itself. Yeah. And the fact that he's gone on such a, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of his last 7 starts have been absolutely insanely bad. So
is there a more inconsistent pitcher in baseball than this guy?
I mean, Francisco Liriano, no.
Yeah, but Liriano's consistent now, and now he's just bad all around. But, like, Salazar, he's kind of got that even-year, odd-year crap going with the 1.13 whip in 2016 and 2014. 2013 and 2015, he had a 1.1 whip. I mean, obviously, he's always going to be a whip liability anyways, because the stuff's so nasty. He's always going to have battle the walk issues from start to start, but, I mean, he's a scary guy to own. It's definitely a roller coaster ride.
Yeah, I mean, the walks have always been there. And if you look at the last few starts, you know, I mean, he's walked 2 and 4 innings, 2 and 2 innings, 3 and 1 inning, 3 and 4 innings, 2 and 4 and 5 innings. You know, if you're going to bank on anything, I think it's the fact that he just did so well against Texas, you know, and maybe kind of jumpstarts him going into September. You know, that's all you can really bank on at this point. I, you know, there's not much more that you can, you know, look into. You know, I'm trying to look at the Cleveland schedule, you know, going into this next month. You have the Marlins. You have a series against the Marlins or the Astros, so he probably will get the Marlins next. I'm, you know, okay with starting him at home against Marlins. And then after that, you're going to be looking at the Twins on the road. You have to start him against the Twins on the road. And then you have the Tigers at home. You know, I feel like that's another place that you can start him. You know, I mean, especially since, you know, he's been the type of guy that's done well against Detroit in the past. He hasn't this year, but, you know, last season he did fairly well against them.
Can I do a who'd you rather with Salazar?
Sure.
Would you rather Rich Hill or Danny Salazar?
Salazar still, even though Rich Hill is really good when he's on the field. I gotta say, just a side note with Rich Hill, if you watch him bat, I don't know if there's anything more
entertaining. I haven't seen it.
Oh my god, it's absolutely hilarious watching him bat. There's nothing more, like Johnny Cueto was pitching against him, and I mean, he just, Rich Hill has like just swings for the fences every time he every time he pitches even around, and he gets so pissed when he misses it. Like, you just, he reminds me of Grant Balfour, except for he's not on the mound. He's in the batter's box, and he's just sitting there cussing. He's just cussing Cueto out or somebody out while he's sitting there batting. It's hilarious. It's something that you definitely need to watch. But
last one real quick, Danny Salazar or Danny Duffy, for next season.
I think you gotta go Duffy, and that's just because his skills and everything, you know, underneath has just considerably changed, and he's been more consistent. So you know, he's kind of settled in my opinion.
Agreed.
You know, so Duffy is safer. I will still say that I think Salazar has the ability to win a Cy Young at some point in his career. I don't think Duffy will win a Cy Young in his career, even if I don't think he gets it this year. If for some reason he does, then he does. But I just don't see Duffy ever having that chance. So, you know, higher upside, Danny Salazar, more consistency, I think Duffy.
Yeah. Sorry to put you on the spot, but you did well. I agree with all your answers.
That's cool. So Salazar, you know, I think that you know, based on his schedule, the rest, you know, at least the next to, you know, what, the next three or four starts, you have to start him, you know.
Definitely.
There's nothing in his schedule that tells me you should bench him. You know, and then after that Tigers series, you got the White Sox again, the Tigers again. So you're going to be seeing a lot of NL or AL Central opponents, and, you know, somebody, either the Marlins or the Astros. I mean, that's all you can ask for as a Salazar owner. And you just kind of have to hope and pray that he's going to, you know, kind of catapult into better Salazar area after his last start in Texas.
I'm glad you brought this up, because the schedule from here on out is a very, very important thing for pitchers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can't say that enough. I really haven't heard a lot of people saying that, and it needs to be preached again how important it is, kind of mapping out your projected ads or trade candidates for here on out, for the rest of the season out, because there's a lot of, you know, with it being that tight toward the end, there's a big difference between facing certain teams. So
yeah,
definitely.
Somebody that doesn't matter about schedule is Daniel Murphy.
No.
And last season, he only struck out 8% of the time. And, you know, that equates to over a 92% contact rate. When you look at his September and August for last year, he had a combined 8 home runs. He was hitting over 300, well over 300. The on-base percentage was over 330. And, you know, while even though the walk rate wasn't great, you know, his batting eye was great. The BABIP wasn't inflated, you know. So, and then when you saw him catapult in the playoffs, you know, I still feel like nobody really believed what he was doing, you know, last year at all, especially based
on board now.
Yeah, especially based on his draft cost, because he was still a guy that was going 165. He was the 10th second baseman off the board, and there's really been nobody that has been better this year in terms of, you know, second baseman, at least. He's second on the ESPN player rater for the season. You can't put him in front of Altuve for obvious reasons, but in general, Murphy has been one of the, if he's not the fantasy MVP, he's one of the fantasy MVPs this year based on what he's done. He's the 10th player so far on the ESPN player rater, that includes pitchers and hitters. So this leads me to the question, you know, with 25 home runs, almost 100 RBIs, and 80 runs scored, hitting almost 350, where are you going to take Daniel Murphy next year? And is he, I mean, I can't believe I'm even saying this, is he a top 2-round player?
For me, he is. I was in the minority. I actually asked this question on Twitter last week. I had him pegged as a, you know, your standard 12-team league. I would take him back into the second round. So I have him in the 20 to 30 range. And I got a lot of pushback. I see some people say they wouldn't take him in the top 40. And then I forget, Justin Mason, our own, wouldn't take him in the top. I know he said at least 50. It might have even been top 75, which I think is crazy. But I'm all in on this Murphy train, man. He's a completely different hitter. He made some adjustments. He stands closer to the plate. He's lower. He's in more of a crouch than previous years. He's got that dual eligibility, second base, first base. Not that you're going to play him at first, but if you had to, he's not going to hurt you at all. he's been great, and I definitely wouldn't hesitate taking him in the back end of the second round next year.
Yeah, I wouldn't take him in the second round, but I think that's where he should be valued.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I would do it. I have no issue with it.
Yeah, and he's never been somebody that has gone outside the zone a ton, but you know, even though it's extremely down from last year, he's being way more selective this season. You know, overall he is about league average in that category, so you can't even say that he is, you know, more selective than anybody else, but he just makes a ton of contact. He doesn't miss. His swinging strike rate is about 5%, which is insanely good. You know, I there's not a lot that's going to change going into next year. I mean, you're going to have a lot of the same yep. lineup in Washington. He's going to maintain hitting in a solid spot in that lineup. He has always demonstrated that he can hit for a high contact rate. That's never been something in question with him. I think it's always just been the power. And, you know, when you look at the power of the last 2 years, I mean, he's had a big jump this year. But, you know, even if you project him for 20 home runs next year, where he might end up with 30 this year when it's all said and done. Say you project him for 20 with a 30 batting average, that's still a really good player. You know, me personally, when I do my ranks, I'll probably have him more in like the fourth round. Somewhere about whereabouts there. I mean, because the last 2 years he hasn't stolen any bases really. Mm-hmm. So when when you're ranking guys in the top three rounds, you typically want guys that offer power and speed. And if they don't do both, then they usually offer something big in one of those categories. And he just doesn't really offer that. He's not a big time power hitter, and nor is he a big time stolen base asset. It's more the batting. It's just a mix of all of it. When you have a guy that contributes in four of the five categories in 5x5 roto, that's where his real value lies. And quite frankly, a lot of fantasy owners don't like to bank on somebody repeating the runs and RBIs from a year before. A la Josh Donaldson going into this year. Nobody wanted to bank on the runs and RBIs, repeating from last season. And he, by golly, he's not doing that, but he is, putting up similar close numbers.
Yeah.
So. For me personally, I think going into next year, he is a top 40 player, somewhere around that area. He has proven that he is about as stable as it comes, even without a elite walk rate. He makes enough contact, and we'll stop rambling about him. I think he's just simply an elite player, and he deserves to be, based on where he was drafted, at least in consideration for the fantasy MVP. Brandon Finnegan, who when we did our, kind of the beginning of the show highlight on a couple of pitchers or a couple of players. Brandon Finnegan was one of those guys that was highlighted as leading the league amongst pitchers in strikeout rate over the last 2 weeks. Mind you, that comes with a 90% left on base rate and, honestly, just overall mediocre stuff. I don't think Brandon Finnegan is nearly as good as people might have pegged him coming into this year. But you can't really deny the fact that he's been, solid in, especially his last start against the Dodgers. He, had an amazing outing, only one hit given up in seven innings pitched. But what have you seen from Finnegan this year? Is he somebody that you are going to be relying on the rest of this season and kind of pushing forward into 2017, or are you kind of going the other way?
I'm going the other way for the rest of this year. Long term, I still like him, but the rest of this year, I think he's reaching his innings limit, and he might actually be shut down here pretty soon. The Reds have a lot of young arms. They're all going to want to get some innings in, and I think that's a logical place to get them. If you would have asked me before this year where I thought his ultimate role would have been, I think he can be a starter now. Last year, I probably would have said reliever. He needs to cut the walks down, and the home runs are going to be a problem, but he's in a bad park for that. But going long term, I'm encouraged going forward.
Yeah, I'm not a fan, to be honest with you. He doesn't offer anything elite. He's the type of guy that just really struggles against, both sides of the plate. This year he's kind of been okay against lefties, but he still has a .330 on base percentage against them. Slugging wise, righties are having almost .480 slug against him. OPS is almost .800 against righties. I'm just he's the type of guy that I've been targeting in DFS whenever a righty is on righty hitters are going to be facing him. His xFIP is closer to 5 than it is to 4. Doesn't offer extremely amazing strikeout skills. His swing strike rate is about where you like to see it at 10%, but I don't see it getting any better than that. I think this is more of a you know, back end, you know, top 50 starter going forward. I mean, he is young enough to kind of change things a bit. He's only 23, but I hate the ballpark. I don't like what the Reds do with their starters. You don't really, you know, I know Cueto was great and Bailey has had, you know, his year in fame and everything, but Finnegan already is a guy that doesn't have a big repertoire of pitches, and they're certainly not that quality. So, you know, I feel like he is just more of a middling guy. You know, for the future, I'm just not impressed, and, you know, you kind of do with that what you will. But if you're in keeper in Dynasty, I think that he's a decent guy to trade right now, because I think that this is a lot of what you'll see. His career high, in my opinion, is like a 3.5 ERA with like a 1-2 whip. And, you know, for me, I think you can just get those guys anywhere.
I think I agree to disagree, man. I like him a little bit longer term. I think the strikeouts will be there. They'll uptick significantly. He's only 23 years old, like you said. Yeah, it's the Reds. The park sucks, but the National League is way better than that's worth a couple points on the ERA, a couple tenths on the ERA just being the NL, and I like him better long term. So I guess that's what it is. What it is.
No worries. Starlin Castro, what have you thought about him this year? You know, he's obviously has boosted in the power department. He's hit more home runs this year than any other in his career. I think we have seen what he is in terms of batting average. He's more of a 270-ish guy as opposed to the 300 type of player that he was early on in his career. You know, I'm a little worried about the speed, though, because we haven't seen it come back at all. The last four seasons now, you know, we've seen him have four or five or less stolen bases in three of them. And really, it seems to me like the Yankees just have no, just aren't even thinking about letting him run. You know, he's still only 26, so there's still a ton of room to grow with somebody like Starlin Castro. What are you thinking about him long term? You know, so far in the month of August, he's been crushing it in the home run department, and he's gotten two of his four stolen bases. So I guess that's why Justin put him on the list to, you know, maybe see what we think of him going into next year. But I think that we already kind of know what he is. How about you? What do you think?
I think this year is exactly what he is. I'm glad you rephrased it like that. I'm maybe going to take exactly how you phrased it. I think not that it matters much long term, but I think he's a third baseman, because I think one of the young kids they just got in a couple of those deals will be second base and shortstop, with Gregorius still there. I used to hate this dude when he was on the Cubs, but it looks like all those adjustments that he made at that time last year are gone. He's hitting for more power. The defensively, he's still shaky at second base. He's a nice little 270 guy with about 20 homers, and that's exactly what he's doing right now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we'll see going forward, give or take a 20 home run guy, because, you know, he is benefiting from a home run to fly ball spike. And, you know, again, he's not really running much. So this last month will be kind of telling in terms of what, you know, what his long-term position will be, because maybe they will bring up a couple of guys just to have a cup of coffee. I doubt it. I agree, though, that long-term he probably won't be their second baseman. He will have to move at some point, or he might get moved again. You know, you never really know with guys nowadays. He has an option in 2020, so he'll be there a while unless he gets traded. But regardless, a pretty good trade piece overall, and, you know, somebody that, you know, I think you really couldn't have asked for more from somebody like Starlin Castro, at least going into this year. People kind of wrote him off a bit, and he's been solid. So, you know, overall for Castro, I think he's like a top, 20 second baseman moving forward, which is a deep position. It's just, you know, second and short total. Middle infield is just deep, a lot deeper than people probably realize, and, you know, which makes somebody that hits, you know, 15 home runs and hits for like a 270 batting average just not that worthwhile, unless he has a meaningful jump in any of his other skills. Mainly stolen bases is where he would have to get that.
Agreed. And I don't see that happening, so.
Robbie Ray has kind of come out of nowhere. This is the last player we're going to talk about. You know, I never was in love with him, but he's really taken a step forward this year. You know, just solid. You know, we want to talk about the second half of the season. He's leading in strikeout rate, even above Jose Fernandez. His walk rate has been stellar as well in the second half. You know, what are we thinking about Robbie Ray? Because I'm kind of changing my tune and thinking he's more of a top, you know, at least top 40 guy going into next year, and maybe even better.
Yeah, definitely. I hate the ballpark, but I mean, I can't do nothing about that. I'm a sucker for left-handed dudes too, like that. So left-handed guys with high volume Ks is going to be nice. But I mean, I liked Finnegan, so I mean, what do I know?
Well, this is the difference between him and Finnegan. No, don't mean to cut you off, but his swinging strike rate, Robbie Ray's, has been much better this year. I mean, it's up at 12%, which shows me growth. You know, while Finnegan has kept his at 10%, we've seen some months where it's gone less than that. You know, Robbie Ray has been consistently above 10, 11, 12% this year, any given month. And he has been less prone to the, you know, blow up starts. Where he's blown up is at home, which is again a very hitter friendly ballpark in Chase Field. You know, he has had a 3.56 ERA on the road, 5.02 at home. Somebody like Finnegan, it's been a lot worse. So like that's where the difference kind of lies, is the control is much better with Ray. He's much more mature. He's still young at 24. So I feel like if we're comparing Ray and Finnegan, Ray is just much more refined and fine-tuned overall. You can go on. Sorry, I just want to chime in there.
No, you're good. I agree with everything you said. I just think Finnegan can be Robbie Ray in a year or two. But that's me just being rationally high. But, I mean, I like Robbie Ray a lot. I liked him when Detroit had him, when they traded him to Arizona. I thought that was a nice gift for Arizona. But, again, man, if any other park, I'd be way more in on him than I am now. But that ballpark scares the crap out of me. I mean, you've seen a lot of pitchers there have struggled. The strikeouts, though, are unreal, and you have to ride those out. Hopefully the command tightens up a little bit. But, I mean, the home runs for being in that park aren't that terrible. It's just an issue of if he can jump to that next level if he can tighten that command a little bit. So I'm anxious to see what he does, being only 24.
Yeah, his command has tightened up. Especially, the second half of the season, his command has been great. He has a 4.3 strikeout to walk ratio, which is among the league leaders. So that's something that, that you're talking about that he's doing great at. He's only behind, he's what, top 10 in that category in the second half of the year, kind of behind Dan Straley and Anthony Desclafani, which is very intriguing in itself. Yeah. Yu Darvish is in front of him. Michael Fulmer, so these are some of the guys that are in front of him in the strikeout to walk category, which is a big in season indicator of how people are doing. So, and guess who's on the top of that list?
Perdomo.
No, Masahiro Tanaka. So no, there go you figure. Go. But regardless, I think that I think Robbie Ray is going to settle in as a guy that's at least a top 40 starter. Not the rest of this year, but at least going into next year. And I'm completely fine drafting him in that area. Hopefully he can get signed. He doesn't have as much of a fly ball tilt as he used to. But if he can kind of even get that under wraps when he's at home in Chase Field and keep the ball on the ground more, which he has this year, he's upped his ground ball rate to a career high 47%. If he can do that at home consistently at Chase Field, you might be seeing an even better pitcher moving forward going into next year. Because if people just look at his 4.28 and 1.43 ERA and WHIP, they're not going to be that impressed. But when you look at what he's done on the road, you might take a second look, as well as look into his underlying metrics, which have been much, much better. So that's going to wrap us up, Matt. I know it was a lot of fun, just me and you here. No Justin and Eli to bother us, but appreciate Justin for leaving us with the list of names and getting to talk baseball for a little while. Let people know what you're up to and where you can be followed on Twitter and all that jazz.
MDTop24 on Twitter, and that's about it.
What are you doing with prospects recently? You and I will be coming out with a show, especially in the off season. We'll kind of keep it, probably once every other week. There just hasn't been a ton of
information, not a lot of news
lately. But I promise we will get another one out there fairly quickly to you guys. But you had your latest piece out there on arguably your boy, but also my boy Isan Diaz. anything else that you're working on in terms of your lists and everything?
Don't sleep on Tristan McKenzie in that group either. I like that kid.
He's been great. His last start was awesome too.
Yeah, the two guys that are a little bit less mainstream than they should be. So hopefully that woke you guys up a little bit. But I'm just constantly updating my stuff, up my ranks. I'll put something up on the site here soon. But just watching some baseball. Jed Jerko had another homer, so how about that?
That's 24 and counting.
yep. But I don't know. How about you, man?
Yeah, man, you can, you know, as usual, hit me up on Twitter at Mike Werner, FWFB. We're full blown into the, you know, kind of the finish line here for fantasy baseball. We got another month and some change left. So we're going to keep on going as much as we possibly can for that, for you guys. So that you guys can end up with some, you know, championship rings, hopefully from officialfantasyrings.com. That's a cheap plug. And
there you go.
You know, definitely. Keep on checking out all of the content on the website. We're switching over to a lot of football content as well. So if you're a fantasy football fan and you just are just now starting to kind of get into it before a draft this weekend or whatever, we have a ton of podcasts for that. We also have ranks up on the site. We also have you know, just a lot of stuff on the friendswithfantasybenefits.com to kind of help you out in that. Please rate and review the podcast. Each and every review helps us get noticed by other people and helps us kind of grow. You can check out my daily matchups column on baseballhq.com. That comes out every Saturday. So if you are a subscriber, definitely check that out. Even if you aren't, there's a ton of free content on the site as well. I'm still doing my raise updates for fantasy pros and for football. I'll be kind of broadening my horizons there as well. So a lot going on. Please check it all out. Like I mentioned with Official Fantasy Rings, go to officialfantasyrings.com and you can use the promo code FWFB at checkout and receive 20% off now. So it's an amazing trophy for your league. Instead of you know, hauling a belt or anything like that, you can just use a ring. I've seen some of them. They are absolutely amazing. Customizable, has anything that you want put on there. It's only a couple bucks per owner to really get that done. So go ahead and do that. And yeah, that's about it. For Matt and myself, go win some championships. Every night.